And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. I did not copy it off. I was reading an article last night. It was so fascinating, intriguing. But let me give you the gist of it real quick. It was all about vitamin A. Two things. Number one, some people, when they're born, they just have much lower levels of vitamin A from their birth. And number two, maybe they're a little bit predisposed genetically to having lower levels. And a lot of times how it works is the very first child the mother has, it gets first shot at all the nutrients. Even God has designed this fail-safe system, even if mama is not eating good high-quality food and she's munching down on junk food, the baby is still going to get its nutrients. It just may be at the mom's expense. But in this article, they were looking at two things. One was vision. And to me, this is just so interesting. But it was showing that people that constantly have to squint and wear sunglasses when they're outdoors, and the light is way too bright for them. You know anybody like that? If they go outside in the sunlight, it's overwhelming. They have to have sunglasses on just to be able to function. Well, in this study, they were showing that was correlating to low levels of vitamin A. And so vitamin A is so critical to maintaining the health and the integrity of your eyesight. Just incredible. Which, I know where I found the article on the internet. I may have to copy it off so I can read the whole thing thoroughly. But the next thing that I noticed, there was a study, and for some reason, I want to say it was done in Israel. And in the study, they took individuals that, when they were tested for their hearing, they had some degree of hearing loss. What I want you to think of is a family member where you have to talk really, really loud in order for them to hear, because I just can't hear. But when they gave vitamin A to these older people with hearing loss, it improved the threshold of hearing by about 10 to 15 decibels on average. To me, evidently, vitamin A has a little bit to do with the sense of hearing. And so I thought that was interesting also. And I think one of the... What was the other one? Okay. This one was more complicated. But in this one study, they were looking at the number of antibiotics that a person had, and then vision loss and hearing loss. And I'm not even going to attempt to quote it because it had so many numbers, and I really didn't look at it that closely, but it caught my attention because I thought, okay, the human body requires nutrients to maintain the integrity of all the tissues. And so let me say this two or three different ways. Number one, throughout history, the number one cause of death that's plagued mankind has been infection. I don't know if you've ever heard of smallpox. Have you ever heard of the plague, for example? Have you heard of the Spanish flu in 1918 that killed 40 to 60 million people worldwide? Have you heard of pneumonia? Have you heard of, well, of course, that all makes sense. Sepsis, all those things are infection. And the point is, what are the circumstances that would allow these bacteria to take hold and set up shop and just be never-ending infections? And so there's always been the concept since the invention or the discovery of antibiotics that maybe what we need is just more antibiotics, but I'm going to give you a different take on that. You've got to come to the point where you start to realize it's the health and the integrity of the terrain and the tissues that probably is going to be the game changer when it comes to infection. And so let me say it this way. You don't have a deficiency of penicillin. I know penicillin is necessary, just like amoxicillin is. If somebody's got like an abscessed tooth and you go to the dentist, well, that would be a clear-cut indication that they're probably going to be prescribed amoxicillin. And you know what? Those are serious. You can't just blow off an infection like that, or if somebody has double pneumonia. That's where an antibiotic might be a total, complete cure for that individual. But what about the health and the integrity of the tissues? And so, let me just kind of say it this way. We have an outer covering on our body. It's called our skin. But you also have your inner skin. And your inner skin is going to be all the internal linings that protect you from the outside world. So, for example, if I talk about the lining of your gut, you want the lining of the gut to be very robust and hardy, doing its job to protect you from infection. Well, two elements that are completely essential to maintaining the integrity of the gut would be zinc. You've heard of that mineral before. Oh my goodness, zinc has had so much good positive press. Did you know that you cannot make antibodies against a viral infection or against a bacterial infection or a fungal infection without zinc? And so when you give zinc to an individual, their body can in turn use that to strengthen the integrity of the immune system. So it's when the immune system is more robust and more vital, and when it's radiant, then it can do its job. It has energy in reserve. But if you're very low in zinc, most likely the lining of your gut is going to be quite thin, which means you're going to be more prone to infection somewhere in the body. The other one's vitamin A. Vitamin A might end up being, besides what I told you earlier about visual issues and hearing loss, vitamin A might actually be one of the most important nutrients that you need to maintain the integrity of your body. Anyway, I came across a study right here. Let me read this to you so we can be on the same page. And I think it has the study here. Okay, you know that in your gut, you have trillions of bacteria. If you have trillions of good, healthy, beneficial bacteria, then what they do is, number one, they play a role in helping you digest your food. Okay, that's a good thing. Number two, when they eat some of the good food that you give them, like if you give them onions or broccoli or an apple or avocados, then what happens is, they in turn make your body stronger and healthier. And so the more beneficial bacteria you have, usually you have a stronger, more vital immune system, which I don't know if you've heard this before, but easily 90%+ of your entire immune system, guess where it's found, folks? It's found right there in your gut. It's so important. And so here's one study right here. It's been proven that gut microbes, the good ones, they actually produce these compounds that prime your natural God-given immune system or the immune cells. And what they do is when the gut microbes are doing their job, they prime your immune cells and then helps your body destroy harmful viruses that can end up in the brain or the nervous system. Okay, are you with me on that? Okay, here's a study. A study from the Department of Pathology at the University of Utah, Salt Lake City, it's shown that mice that were treated with antibiotics, which, what I mentioned earlier, antibiotics can actually kill some of the good bacteria, not just the bad bacteria, but they kill the good ones also. So mice treated with antibiotics before the onset of disease, they were unable to defend themselves. You know what that means? If you give antibiotics, for example, prophylactically, so what if a person says, you know what, I've got a little few blemishes on my face, let me go take some tetracycline for 5 years straight. Well, what you're doing is you're killing all the good beneficial bacteria, and if you kill the good ones, guess what's going to take up space in your gut? It's going to be the bad bugs. And so these mice that were given antibiotics before they ever were sick with an infection, they were unable to defend themselves. These mice had a weak immune response. They were unable to eliminate the virus. And what they did was they developed paralysis. And of course, in this study, they're only looking at viruses that would affect the brain or the nervous system. So you start thinking about diseases like multiple sclerosis, for example, or there's actually a number of so many unusual diseases where a person would experience paralysis. What would you do if there was a young girl that was paralyzed in the lower half of her body and she couldn't move her legs at all? I mean, wouldn't that get your attention? So in these, so the mice that were given antibiotics before they ever were exposed to a virus that caused nervous system paralysis, they couldn't defend themselves. That means the virus could do whatever it wanted to infect the brain and nervous system, leading to paralysis in these mice. While on the flip side of the coin, the mice that had the normal gut bacteria, they were the best in their ability to fight off the virus that caused the nervous system paralysis. Now, wouldn't that be kind of unusual if you came across a mouse that couldn't use its lower half of the body? Yeah, that'd be unusual. And so God knows what he's doing. Good, beneficial bacteria, they're doing their job. So what do you think about a person that gets sick all the time? They have one infection after the other. And if the only thing you're doing to respond to that is to give another dose of antibiotics, well, I'm not trying to practice medicine here, but you just have to ask the question, what am I missing? Am I making the child stronger, or am I making the child weaker? Okay. If you have, within the lining of your gut or in your gut, if you have a very healthy and diverse microbiota, which is one of the terms that's used, if you want to call it the microbiome or the flora or the good bacteria, that's okay by me. But it's shown from this mouse study that if you have a healthy and diverse microbiota, it's crucial for quickly clearing viruses from the nervous system to prevent paralysis and other risk-associated diseases such as multiple sclerosis. I don't know if you know anybody that has MS, but one of the triggers for MS is you have this viral infection. So all I'm doing is I'm trying to tie it in that a healthy gut is a healthy immune system, which in turn enables your body to clear viruses that might cause paralysis. So, what if you've been prescribed antibiotics in the past? Well, you need to make sure that you do whatever you can to restore your good beneficial bacteria to its former healthy state, which I'm not saying that's easy to do. It's doable, but it's challenging if you take an antibiotic. And so what you can do is you can, and this is your takeaway. What if all you did today was start consuming foods that are rich in friendly bacteria? That could be yogurt. That could be kefir. One of the best ones of all time is sauerkraut. Or if you want to, well, when I say sauerkraut, I'm not really referring to, the sauerkraut on the shelf is fine. But the one that's the gold mine that's really good for you, that's the refrigerated one. So if you go into a store, like a health food store, and they have this open air refrigerator or freezer, and you see these jars of refrigerated pickles or sauerkraut, all different flavors, and you look at them and you go, I wonder why they haven't refrigerated. Well, that's because they haven't been pasteurized and cooked. They're raw. That's the one you want to go to right there. Okay, here's two studies right here. One of these studies was done on mice, and the other was done on human beings. That's right, the two-legged kind. So in these two studies, it points to the importance of exercise in order to keep a healthy gut flora or your microbiome. And so you may not have heard that before, but you need to hear this. This is so important. So physical movement is critical to maintaining the health and the integrity of your immune system and also your gut flora. A researcher, well, he's a professor, Jeffrey Woods, a University of Illinois professor of kinesiology, he showed that exercise mice, they had a much higher proportion of microbes that produce butyrate, which is a short-chain fatty acid that promotes healthy intestinal cells. It reduces inflammation in the body, and it generates energy for you, for the host. They also appeared to be more resistant to an experimental model where they tried to cause the mice and humans to have ulcerative colitis, which is an autoimmune inflammatory bowel disease. And so when they tried to cause these older mice to have ulcerative colitis, it was so much worse in the older obese adult mouse compared to the lean one. And your gut microbiome has so much to do with that as far as a positive outcome. Now listen to this right here, because this one's so easy right here, and most people love this. Not everybody. We have known for some time that avocados help you feel full, and they also have been shown to reduce blood cholesterol. What I would say is, they help improve the health of your body where there's no reason for cholesterol to become elevated. That's what I would say. But now scientists at the University of Illinois, they found that people who ate avocados every day as part of a meal, they had a greater abundance of good beneficial gut microbes, that they would actually break down the fiber and they would produce metabolites like what I just mentioned, butyrate or butyric acid. And what that does is it supports very good gut health. Folks, I think you're going to learn at some point, your gut is so important and so critical to your health. You cannot have a healthy body and have an unhealthy gut. It's impossible. But in this study, the people that ate avocados every day, they had a much greater microbial diversity compared to people in the control group that did not eat avocados. And that was a good thing. What they're saying is they had more unique individual species or colonies of beneficial bacteria when they ate avocados every day as compared to those that did not. And so they're saying avocados are the new apples. You can be the first to your friends to say an avocado a day keeps a doctor away. Anyway, I find that so interesting. Okay, the number here at the station is 903-586-5257. If you want to call me and ask a question or make a comment, I would invite you to do so. There is officially a phone line open. You can call in right now if you like. If nobody wants to call, oh my goodness, I've got so much good information. In the year 2005, Dr. James A. Levine of the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, he published a groundbreaking paper that added a key insight to what we know about the benefits of exercise. Well, you're probably wondering, well, what is the message? And this is what he found out. Being active is not enough for the mind, the brain, or the body. And this is what he came up with. He said, it's the persistent sitting down which is the real killer. And this is regardless of our level of physical activity. Sitting down is the silent addiction. I think this little article in the book is called Our Love Affair with a Chair. So every day, commuters sit for long periods in cars. Depending on where you live, maybe it's a train, maybe it's a bus. Some 70% of all workers, they spend 7 hours, 5 or 6 days a week in an office chair, getting up only for short breaks. And when they get home, we sit to eat. We sit down to watch television or to read. Even when we go out, we sit in restaurants. You go to the movies and you're sitting down for 2 hours. If they have a lot of commercials to play or previews, maybe a lot longer than that. In the United Kingdom back in 1950, there were 1.6 million cars. Now there are 38 million. Does that tell you something? It's been estimated that most people spend 30 of their 119 waking hours each week just watching television. 30 hours a week, that's incredible. Our nation and our Western culture more generally has developed a love affair with a chair, and it's not doing us any good at all. How has this debilitating state of affairs crept up on us? Well, if you go back to between 1700 and 1750 in Great Britain, they had this agricultural economy, and the population remained pretty stable, about 6 million people. Both men and women engaged in long hours of physical labor, rising early from bed, walking to their places of work, and walking back home in the evening. Even 250 years later, at the turn of the 20th century, life in rural England, they followed much of the same pattern. And, of course, what you get is you get the idea that we're not on the farm anymore. And if you were on the farm, you would be walking and moving. I know it was unusual, but my mother liked to take two one-gallon jugs, and she would walk, I want to say, it was a little over a half a mile down to the spring. She would get her water, and she would carry it back. And you'd say, yeah, but that water's heavy. Well, yeah, but look what it did. It kept her strong. In 1750 Britain, they imported 2.5 million pounds by weight of raw cotton, most of which was spun and woven by the cottage industry in Lancashire. By 1787, raw cotton imports had risen to 22 million pounds, most of which was cleaned, carded, and spun on machines. That means humans didn't do it anymore. The Industrial Revolution had started. And with the growth of the cities, Birmingham, population 70,000 in 1800, they had 300,000 inhabitants by 1850. So that's like over four times as much. The problem is all these changes in letting machines do the work for us, or in modern times, letting machines entertain us or electronics, they have a deadly dual effect. We move less, and then we sit more. Okay? Where's this right here? Okay. The horrendous truth is this. Even if you exercise daily, or if we exercise daily, and even beyond the approved recommendations, what happens is, if you engage in prolonged sedentary behavior, what it does is it wipes out the benefit of that physical activity. So, paradoxical though as it sounds, we can simultaneously be categorized both as physically active and sedentary all at the same time. Though first noted in the 17th century by Italian physician Bernardino Ramazzini, I hope I said his name right, it was not until Levine's research in 2005 that the negative health effects of sedentary behavior became clear. He defined sedentary behavior as long periods daily of sitting down, using up very low levels of calories. In scientific terms, any behavior whose energy costs less than 1.5 metabolic equivalents of a task. Anyway, what that means is your body is not burning many calories. Okay? Sedentary behavior is tremendously destructive and plays havoc with our bodies. Listen to this. Data modeling predicts that the mortality rate increases by 2% for every seated hour and by 8% where the total seated time is greater than 8 hours a day. You get that? We're talking about mortality. You lose if you sit down. You lose your lifespan by 2% for every seated hour. Isn't that it's crazy? Sedentary life with prolonged low levels of physical activity, they increase the risk of almost every major chronic disorder, including heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, and cancer. Put simply, there is another dose effect here. The longer we spend in sedentary behavior, the greater our risk of poor health. Well, you know what the solution to this is. Move more. Move faster if you can. Sometimes I kind of imitate my 90-plus-year-old patients that move faster than anybody else. I wonder how they got there. Well, they move fast. There is a threshold for benefiting from physical activity, and it is quite high. Daily moderate to intense exercise of 60 to 75 minutes. That's the amount it takes just to compensate for long periods spent sitting. Did you get that? If you sit down long periods of time for the day, like hours, you're going to need 60 to 75 minutes of moderate to intense exercise just to offset that. And what is the inevitable result for sedentary lifestyle? Childhood obesity is going up because they're raised by the televisions. A recent study of 1,500 older adults found that those who were sedentary for 10 hours a day and took less than 40 minutes of moderate daily exercise, they had the bodies and the health of people 8 years older. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you today?
I have just a couple of questions, if it's okay.
You betcha.
First of all, arthritis pain. Is there anything that you recommend other than kind of the usual MSM and chondroitin, those sorts of things?
Where is the pain located?
In my hands, thumbs, and to a lesser extent, the fingers.
Are you taking any blood pressure medications?
Actually, yes. HCTZ and lisinopril.
Well, what you're going to find is when a person's dominant arthritic pain is coming from the hands, that's almost always going back to the kidneys. And so if you went to your doctor and said, you know what, I'd like to do a little bit different blood test this time, please measure me for what's called uric acid. I don't know if you've ever heard of uric acid before.
Yes, I have. Isn't it what causes gout?
Exactly. Bingo. Good job. In men, when uric acid starts to rise above the level 5, some studies say like 5.2 to 5.5, but I'm just going to say 5 to round it off. When uric acid gets above 5, you've got the potential to have arthritis start to form in your hands. And so one of the foods that's been shown to lower uric acid is going to be cherries. And so if you made a commitment to eating somewhere between 20 to maybe 40 cherries a day, I mean, that's just a guideline. Everybody's different. I don't know everything about you. But if you eat the frozen cherries, those are the ones I like the best because they pick them when they're ripe. They pit them or remove the stone, wash them, and flash freeze them. So I think it has a higher nutrient density that gets locked in. My opinion is they're probably even superior to getting the fresh ones. The fresh ones are great too, but they had to pick them before they were ripe, and so they may not have as much time on the vine, so to speak, to get their nutrient density. So if you start eating cherries, we're going to find out if this is something that really helps benefit your kidneys and removes the inflammation from the uric acid. Now, uric acid is a very interesting compound. Uric acid on one level is a very good compound. But if there's too much of it, it starts to wreak havoc, meaning it starts to slice up and cut and damage the lining of your arteries. So anytime that the kidneys are stressed or the kidneys are weak, you're going to see some issues with the hands. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely. There's a vegetable drink available here that has cherry extract, a large amount of it in that. I wonder if that would be...
Well, you can give it a try, but day in and day out, where I see the results from eating the whole cherries that haven't been juiced. And so maybe there's some component that's found in their pulp or their fiber that you wouldn't get in the cherry juice. And plus, the other thing is, when you get it in the form of a frozen cherry or a fresh cherry, it has this vital life force. And if there's a cherry powder or a juice, it may be dead at that point as far as being pasteurized or cooked or processed. Can I tell you one story that a man told me the other day? And
sure.
To me, it was interesting. He's right at 70 years old or close to 70. And he told me, he says, Dr. Morgan, he said, I was just terrified that I was going to be in a wheelchair. You know, the moment I retired from my job, that I was going to be in a wheelchair because my knees kill me. And he was just relaying to me that he could walk from the back of his house down toward the lake that's behind his house, or down from his house. But he was just saying he would kill me to walk back up to the house. And I don't know how far it is. I'm just going to say 400 yards. But he says, my knees were so bad, I didn't know what I was going to do. Now, let me skip to the story. He said that the church that he attends, they were promoting the idea of fasting to start the year off. And they said one of the purposes in fasting is instead of spending your time and your energy eating food or preparing food or making food or, you know, all the stuff that goes along with it or washing the dishes after, you know, cleaning up, you spend your time in praying for yourself and praying for others and the needs of the church and the needs of people around the world and all these beautiful spiritual things that you could do in prayer and also in reading scripture. And he said, well, what I did was I decided I just wouldn't eat. And I want to say he said either 5 days or 10 days without food. Obviously, he drank water, and he probably put minerals in the water, which was smart. I think he said his wife decided that she would fast too, but she would just skip two meals and only eat one meal a day. So she was fasting from two of her meals, and she would in turn use that time in prayer. And so he told me he started, as he began to fast, he would go onto YouTube and the internet, and he would watch videos and listen to documentaries on fasting. And he goes, oh my goodness, I didn't realize how scientific this was. But here's the punchline. He says, all of a sudden, after fasting for a number of days, my knees were completely pain-free. And he turned to me, he said, have you heard of the term called autophagy? And I said, why, yes, I have. And I don't know if you've heard of the term autophagy, but what it means is this. Autophagy is, if you break the word down, it means auto and phagy, which means self-eating. And so when you're not putting food in your body, or you know the point I'm fixed to get to, if you're eating something that's hard on your kidneys, you can learn that through fasting. So by fasting, he got rid of the food or the substance, and his body started cleaning out all the deranged proteins and the debris and the toxins that obviously were causing tremendous inflammation of his knees. But in your situation, and I've seen this work before, and there's a lot of ways to do it, but one of the simple ways, what if you just fasted on water and cherries, which means instead of eating biscuits and gravy for breakfast, I'm just joking by saying that, but some people do. Instead of eating biscuits and gravy for breakfast and pizza for supper, what if you just had cherries instead? You've got something you can learn about yourself here. But what if it creates a circumstance where your body starts cleaning out all the inflammatory debris from your fingers and your hands, and you tell me, oh my goodness, I'm a new man. So that's one option you have.
Great.
But if
I will go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if I were you, you might consider having your doctor run a uric acid profile. And if it comes back above 5, to me, that strongly suggests your body's out of control and just producing too much arthritis-producing chemicals.
And there's a possibility that blood pressure medication can make it worse?
Well, it can, but that's not my angle on it. Here's where I was coming from. The kidneys have complete regulatory control over your blood pressure. They have all these specialized sensors. So one of the things that happens if your blood pressure is higher than what it should be, your kidneys start releasing chemicals and hormones and substances to help correct it and lower the blood pressure. So, for example, if the kidneys become weak, if they become stressed, if they become sluggish, if they're not doing their job properly, then blood pressure can go up. And so what does the doctor do? The doctor might give you a substance called hydrochlorothiazide, a diuretic. It's almost like taking a tired horse and cracking the whip or digging in the spurs, making him run or making her run faster, even though the horse is tired and you should rest the horse. So if you take a thiazide diuretic, you're going to start losing a lot of the precious minerals and nutrients. They're just going to be flushed out. But if you're taking a blood pressure medication, that's just an indication that your kidneys are weak. The kidneys are the gatekeeper on this. So a lot of times if a person has arthritis, my first thought is, what's going on with the kidneys? It doesn't have to be the kidneys. It might be the liver that's the weak link or the gut. So if you're taking a blood pressure medication, to me that means the kidneys are weak and not doing their job properly. That's not a slam towards you, or I'm not trying to be negative. So if you're taking blood pressure medication, my deduction is most likely this is a kidney issue. So I jump from that to uric acid, because if the kidneys are weak, they cannot remove uric acid the way that healthy kidney should. So we got an opportunity to improve your kidneys. I mean, one of the simplest things you can do right now is you could take 1/2 teaspoon of just plain Jane Arm & Hammer baking soda, and you could stir it in a little bit of water each morning. And you could drink that for, say, a month and tell me if your hands feel better.
Interesting. I take baking soda for acid reflux anyway.
Yeah. Now, do you have acid reflux?
Yes. It's less severe now that I started dissolving a little bit of baking soda okay. in all the water that I drink.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's a good, smart move. But if you're taking high blood pressure medication and you have a touch of acid reflux, That tells me that your body is producing way too much inflammation somewhere in the gut or the kidneys or both. That's probably what I do in my mind, is I just quickly think, if the gut is not doing its job and there's inflammation, some of that inflammatory waste is going to leak through the lining of the gut, get in the bloodstream, and then it's the job of the kidneys to try to do its job by filtering any impurities from the blood. So if one part is a bit toxic, it's going to make the kidneys have to work a little bit harder. But if you had one green salad a day, what you would do is you would effectively give your body alkaline ash minerals. I want to say one of the studies that I read not that terribly long ago showed one salad a day is going to be about 5,000 milligrams of potassium. Now, whether you know this or not, if you went to the health food store and say, hey, I think I'm going to start taking some potassium, well, the maximum dose that you're going to be able to find because of FDA regulations is 99 milligrams. Well, how many potassium tablets would you have to take to get to the equivalent of a big bowl of salad? Well, it's incredible. You're not going to take 50 potassium tablets a day. That's nuts. But if you had a salad, now we're starting to soothe the kidneys, and that's kind of what the baking soda does. Baking soda, it has an alkaline soothing effect upon the kidneys. And then with your hands, do you like to go for walks in the evening?
Yes. I'm not as regular about it as I should be, though.
Yeah, but you like doing it, so I'm going to give you credit for that. But if you start going for walks every evening, what you're really doing is you're increasing the blood flow and the oxygen. See, the two things that your cells really like, or what I should say is the two things your cells require for health, is they want to take oxygen and water and all nutrients into the cell. But the second part of the equation is they want to be able to remove all the waste and wash it away. But if there's an interruption in any of those, either the first or the second proposition, you're going to have a disease start somewhere, and that's where you're going to have symptoms. And so a lot of times, do you mind if I just kind of break it down more simply for you? Every time that I see arthritis of the hands, the first thing I think of is, are they eating a food that's causing the immune system stress or strain? And so have you ever considered that you might have some type of a low-grade hidden food allergy?
Oh, I hadn't thought of that, but I don't know what it would be.
Well, and I don't either, but I could guess it could be anything from, it could be from sugar, it could be to wheat, it could be corn, it could be dairy. Those are probably the top ones. I think I saw a guy the other day that his deal was soybeans. And I think I saw two people this week, their deal was monosodium glutamate, or MSG. That would be what you would get if you eat out a lot. You're going to get a boatload of MSG, especially in any type of food that would be breaded, like a chicken nugget or a breaded chicken sandwich, or if you had Chinese food. Actually, I was discussing this with Jonathan yesterday. we were talking about a Mexican food restaurant that we've been to, and we were both convinced that MSG is used in great abundance on the meat that they serve, and we were going, rats. So anything that you're allergic to is going to act like a toxin or a poison. So if you can figure out what that is and remove it, then all of a sudden your kidneys have a much easier opportunity to heal and repair themselves.
Okay, I guess the only way to try to figure that out is to start eliminating things from the diet.
Yeah, and so what would happen if you ate cherries all day long, or just whenever you're hungry, whenever you want to, if you did a cherry fast with water and cherries for 3 days? What if this is the best that your hands have ever felt? Then as you introduce foods back in, what if you said, you know what, I think I'm going to start off with Lucky Charm cereal? I'm just joking about that. But if you ate that, you might go, why are my hands hurting again all of a sudden? Well, it wouldn't be rocket science. You'd put two and two together. You'd say, wow, I felt a whole lot better. What's in the Lucky Charm cereal? I'm not against Lucky Charms, but it would be one of those fake foods. It's not real, even though it's sold as real food. And so it's, you can figure it out. You really can.
Uh-huh. Great. Well, I will certainly try the cherries. My other question was, did I understand on one of your shows that if you eat nuts, it's harder to get over a virus infection. Did I understand that correctly, or did I get it?
No, you got that right. There is an amino acid called lysine. And lysine can be, I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but some people are just horribly plagued with cold sores and fever blisters, and they can occur in locations that are just downright painful, like inside their lip, around their nose, inside their nose, on their lips, and it can be brutal. But lysine, if you eat a lot of nuts, it's going to err on the side of having a lot of the amino acid arginine, and so they call it the lysine to arginine ratio. And so eating a lot of nuts might disrupt that and make you more predisposed to having viral issues. Not in everybody, but in some people. So if you told me you loved eating peanut butter, it's your favorite food of all time, you don't even eat anything else, I'd say, well, maybe you're going to have a problem with that.
I do love peanut butter, but it's certainly not, to extreme excess.
Yeah. And so that's just one thing that you might think about. But the other way to look at this is, what if you told me, I'm going to have a bottle of lysine, or L-lysine, which is an amino acid. What if you had that in your medicine chest, or you kept it in your kitchen cabinet or cupboard where you kept your nutritional remedies? At the first sign that you were coming down with a cold or a fever and you said, I think I have a virus. Well, it sure wouldn't hurt to take a little bit of lysine, because lysine does play a role in helping your body overcome viral infections.
And that's L-lysine and not R-lysine or whatever the other
yes,
is.
L, the levolysine, levorotatory, instead of D for dextrorotatory. So L-lysine, okay. Yes, sir, and that's what I said. So sometimes people just love to eat trail mix all day long, or they love anything with nuts, like peanut butter, and they wonder, why am I plagued with one viral infection after the other? Well, sometimes you make your immune system sluggish and not respond to viruses, just like I think I've mentioned on the radio show about 1.2 zillion times. The number one predictor of someone having an infection they can't get over is going to be blood sugar. And so if blood sugar is elevated, well, that does not bode well when it comes to overcoming infections. And so I know it's a shock to people, but like if you had a child that's sick all the time and can never get well, and they're eating candy and sugar and drinking pop that's full of sugar, because sometimes people don't eat sugar, they just drink it, you know what I mean? But if you get a lot of sugar, it's just nearly impossible to overcome the burden of infections in the body. You can't have your immune system overcome the infection if you're consuming more sugar than what you can handle. And so obviously, cutting out sugar is one of the greatest strategies of all time to improve your health and help your body overcome infection.
Great information. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I can't wait to find out what happens with your hands. I want the pain to completely disappear and go away as a byproduct of attacking the root cause of the problem. Let me know what happens to you.
I'll try the cherries and baking soda for that, definitely.
There you go. Well, thank you very much, sir.
I usually call you from Virginia, where I stream on the radio website, but now I'm calling you from Guadalajara, Mexico. You probably don't get too many calls from there.
No, this is the first one. Now, where is Guadalajara?
Where is it? It's,
yeah, in relationship to Texas.
It's west of Mexico City, if that means anything, and it's
oh, wow. It's a long, it's long and far away.
Yes.
Well, good. Well, I wish you the very best. I hope you can find some frozen cherries in Guadalajara.
Yeah, I'll try to find some.
Good deal. Thank you very much for your phone call, sir.
Thank you for the information.
You're welcome. Take care, buddy. Bye-bye. All right, there's the phone line. Wants to get open at 903-586-5257. I don't even know how many people I've seen over the years that had horrible, horrible hand pain. But in one of the components, you just have to address it. If you're eating a food that's putting stress on your immune system or your kidneys or your gut, it may not make logical sense, but what have you got to lose if you try giving it up? Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I wasn't going to call because I've been to an orthopedic surgeon, but...
But you did.
I think, I know, his instructions were to take ibuprofen for a month, and I don't want to take ibuprofen for a month.
I don't want you to take it if you don't have to either. That stuff's so hard on the kidneys.
I think I stepped in one too many gopher holes finally. I mean, I'm almost 70, so you got to figure it. They did take an x-ray. I've got a little osteoporosis on, I mean, not osteoarthritis on the medial side of my knees, but
okay.
He twisted my knee and I cried out in pain. And he said it's probably a degenerative torn meniscus.
You mean the orthopedist grabbed your knee, twisted it, and said, does that hurt?
Yeah.
Okay.
It could tell. But the strange thing is, I wasn't having constant pain. I could walk in and,
mm-hmm.
you know.
That's good.
I mean, I'd put off having bone spurs removed from the top of my big toe joint where it meets the other, you know, the metatarsal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For 20 years. And I put off carpal tunnel for 5 years. And I don't know. After moving to a new house we built, the hard floor is, I think, the worst thing on my back ever.
Is the hard floor. Okay, slab foundation. There you go.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say pier and beam. I'm going, well, those are soft compared to a slab.
I miss the old crooked floor.
Yeah.
It is really weird.
I tell you what, I'm very sympathetic to what you're saying. Yeah, it's easier on the bones and the joints, isn't it?
It's amazing the difference in... I've walked in a house where they had a floated floor in the entry in the
mm-hmm.
common areas, and the but not in the bedroom. They had carpet, and I could tell. I said, "What did you do when y'all built this house?" And I said, "Well, this is the way the builder built it. He didn't build many houses with this." That was great. It was great, and I wish we'd done that.
Oh, how cool!
But anyway, that's the past. But the worst thing, when we had all those huge storms about 2 weeks ago, almost 3 weeks ago now, and everybody around the neighborhood had trees down, and
mm-hmm.
one fell in part of a car, one fell in part of a house. We didn't have any, I'm not going to clog up the streets with my vehicle. I will ride my bicycle
around
the neighborhood.
And how did that go?
I guess I wasn't warmed up in... tried to get on the bicycle like you get on a horse, and I should have not done it that way. But anyway, I literally fell onto the left knee, which had been bothering me for 2 weeks. And it got a little bit worse. And I mean, I rode my bicycle after that around the different people's homes.
Well,
you
did have an injury to your knee then.
There was something going on. I said, I'm not going to put this off for 5 years.
No, I don't recommend you do that. I think we should attack right now.
So I'm using Voltaren, which is a very strange thing, but I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know where to get it. I didn't know if it was generic. Discovered it's about $5 an ounce, you know.
Is that just fancy aspirin?
It's got diclofenac in it, whatever that is. But it says from diclofenac you can injure your stomach, have bleeding, and blah 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 blah. Just
you know, one thing that sometimes takes the place of that is a substance called methylene blue.
Methylene blue.
Yeah, it's a form of chloride. It makes it's like a blue dye they used to use to dye pants and. A lot of doctors back at the turn of the century, they would use this very, very successfully to wash out wounds. And so, like if they did like open surgery on an artery in the neck or something, they would just douse it with methylene blue as a way to disinfect it. And I'm not trying to be funny here, but the other day I was walking from the parking lot toward a store that sold bait, as in minnows over on Lake Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a kid coming out the door, and he was carrying this bag of minnows. And guess what color the water was? Well, it was just as blue as it could. That's right. Because that's what they do. They put methylene blue because it keeps fungus and bacteria and all the viruses just non-existent in these minnows. It keeps them alive. So I always find that interesting. And I was reading the other day about it that women that used to have chronic urinary tract infections, they would give them exactly 65 milligrams of methylene blue. But what I was going to say, that drug you just mentioned, that's what they used to use in place of, I mean, they used to use methylene blue more successfully to treat pain. So that might be something you might look at.
Well, I don't want to just, well, I don't want to just treat the pain. I want to find out the
Well, I know, things. But you're talking about Voltaren, you're talking about ibuprofen.
Voltaren used to be only prescription in February the 20th.
I know, but it's a drug, though.
I mean, 2020, yeah, February of 2020, they made it over the counter, and a friend of ours who's older said that used to put capsaicin in it, and they don't, and they don't put it in any longer.
Well, you can get capsaicin. Right. Well, here, let me give you some ideas. Number one, you could take fresh lemon juice. You could rub the fresh lemon juice over the area of injury at least 6 or 7 times a day. Just take a little wedge of fresh lemon, squeeze it in your hand, rub it on your knee, let it soak in. What have you got to lose? Then you could follow up with what's called unfiltered extra virgin olive oil. Rub it all over the knee. See if the nutrients soak in and start the healing process. Then every night when you go to bed, you can just very simply and easily rub castor oil all over the painful parts of your knee.
What baffles me is that on this, I saw the doctor on a Wednesday, and I was had some, a lot of things to do, and we don't live near a big store that starts with a W, ends with a T. Anyway, I did start taking the Voltaren on a Friday when I finally got some. And no, I started taking it on a Tuesday when my husband was able to get some and find some when he was in town. And then my legs started getting worse. Wednesday.
Well, how would you like me to help? How would you like me to help you?
I couldn't walk.
What would you like me to do to help you?
Does the meniscus can a meniscus heal?
Absolutely, it can. How would you like me to help you?
I wondered if you'd heard of Voltaren and if you knew what
it's just
does.
a fancy aspirin.
Fancy aspirin.
Okay. What do you want me to do besides if I heard of a drug?
I mean,
do you want me to tell you what to do? Do you want me to encourage you? Do you want me to listen to your story?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me where we're going.
Yeah, well, that's what I wondered, if there was an alternative to
yes.
Voltaren.
Yes, rub fresh lemon juice on your knee in the meniscus 5-6 times, 7 times a day. Then rub... What now?
It can heal on its own, the meniscus.
Well,
I mean, is it possible that a part of it can
do you realize off? this is a radio? I can't examine your knee through the radio.
Oh, I know.
People call me all the time, and they won't even tell me their name, and they'll say, Dr. Morgan, I have a knife sticking in my back. Can I be healed? I'm going, well, I really don't know. How deep is the knife? I mean, was it a big knife, a little knife? But anyway, yes, the meniscus, God has designed the body to heal itself at every turn. But you have to do your job and create the right environment for it to heal. And so, for example, the meniscus is made of a piece of cartilage. And so one study that I read not that long ago was involving the use of red light therapy. I don't know if you've heard of red light therapy. They have these red lights that you can just put right on top of your knee. And I want to say one of the ones that I've used is a product called DPL Flex. And you can buy one of those devices for like $75-$85 on eBay or Amazon. But you just wrap this red light therapy around your knee, and the red lights have been shown to stimulate your stem cells from your bone marrow to come down there and start growing some new cartilage for you. So, yes. I don't know the extent of your injury, but if I were in your shoes, that's what I would aim for. What do I have to do to help my knee heal? Usually with a woman, though, the thing that holds her knee in alignment is a muscle group called the hip rotators. And so if you write down the term hip rotators, that is so critical to holding your knees in perfect alignment. And I've just seen a lot of women that I couldn't get their meniscus to heal until we got the hip rotators firing on all eight cylinders. And so the way that you would do that is probably go onto a website called YouTube if you wanted to and type in, how do I stretch? How do I strengthen? How do I repair my hip rotators? But most likely your hip rotators are pretty weak.
Well, up until this pain that started about, well, maybe now 4 months, 4 weeks ago, only 4 weeks ago, I could squat on the floor and sit there for 5 minutes without any discomfort in my knees at all.
See, that's perfect. See, that gives me a lot of confidence. So if you've had an injury, we need to focus on healing.
Just to be able to do things, you know.
Absolutely.
In the garden.
Well, that's that's called the key to healing is restoring function. That's the only way you got through this. You've got to rebuild, repair, heal the cartilage in your knees. Because I love it. I want you to be able to squat with your heels flat on the ground for 5 minutes. That's awesome.
I don't want to ruin my liver. That's what I do not want.
Well, that's why we don't want to take those drugs. Well, it's actually your kidneys. And actually what will happen is those drugs that you mentioned, they're going to cause the cartilage to break down super fast. Don't take my word for it. Look it up for yourself right now. I think you'll find out real quick. You'll go, oh my goodness, why did he prescribe this drug? It's because it gives you relief. But there's more to life than just getting relief from every little boo-boo. Sometimes you got to go through a little bit of pain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
I would have you.
That's my question, you know.
I mean,
the doctor didn't do an MRI. And I was relating this incident to one of my sisters, and she said she had ridden her bicycle 12, 13 years ago up a slight hill, and she tore her meniscus just riding the bicycle, not falling.
Well, the meniscus was in bad shape to begin with. Unfortunately, that was just a straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah. And so her doctor did an MRI immediately and found out it was torn.
Yep.
And did some arthroscopic just to, I guess, trim it up.
That's what they do. Mm-hmm.
But
if this had been 100 years ago, guess what would have happened? The knee would just have to heal on its own. How about that?
How about that?
It just would have taken a while.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, how long a while? What, 6 weeks or 6 months?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of like what I referred to earlier. This was, about 6 months ago, a lady that injured her knee, and I was able just to very simply, as a chiropractor, push the cartilage back into place, and she had no more pain. So sometimes it happens real easy, where you can put it back in its proper alignment, that way the knee cartilage can heal. But that's why I'm telling these things. I want to give you every opportunity for your body to heal and repair itself.
That's often the hardest thing to do, you know, but...
It's where God has you right now. You didn't ask for it, but this is your challenge and your trial and your test this very moment. So we might as well take advantage of it and run with it. And so you're going to have to use some time in doing your own physical therapy. You're going to do your own stretches. Mm-hmm. You know, if you wanted to, you could go onto YouTube right now and type in, what do I do if I've torn my meniscus? What are my exercises? And you would have a great starting point on what to do.
Well, YouTube's got a lot of stuff on it.
It does. It's probably got some bad stuff, but it's got a whole lot of good stuff on it.
Yeah. Okay.
Like if you were looking up how to catch a rat, they show you a million videos on how you can catch one, which I'm sure that's high on your list today.
No, but taking detox tea every morning is high on my list.
Well, then, you know what? When you drink your detox tea, you're telling your body, hey, I love you. I care about you. I want to help you out. So that's good.
I don't want to kill my liver.
No. Well, and you know what? That's why detox tea has dandelion root. So, good job.
Yeah. Well, my dad had a blockage in his... He had a tumor on his pancreas, and he ended up having a pancreatic cancer. But it wasn't until he was 94. But he snacked on too much sugar.
Well,
he snacked on sugary things.
That's a factor.
Said.
Unfortunately, we're all out of time, but I enjoyed the phone call. I hope you have a great Saturday.
Thank you for those tips. I appreciate it. I'm going to look those up.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.